Hope is a thing with feathers, Emily Dickinson tells us. She writes, "Hope is the thing with feathers that perches on the soul and sings the tune without the words and never stops at all. And sweetest in the gale is heard, and sore must be the storm that could abash the little bird that kept so many warm. I've heard it in the chillest land and on the strangest sea, yet never in extremity it asked a crumb of me." I would amend her gentle and beautiful words to include that hope is also a thing with claws. Hope is the thing that carries us through the rough stuff. Hope is the thing that sometimes drags us over rocks and across shrubbery and through some dark, dangerous, painful places until we come out into something good again. Hope of recovery from this flu is what is keeping me going. It has not, however, made it easier to write. So I want to tell you now that great swaths of today's sermon have been excerpted from a variety of sources. I have borrowed words today heavily from my colleague, Reverend Patrick McLaughlin in New Hampshire, and a variety of other sources. Whatever brilliance you may hear from the pulpit today, chances are good, it is not mine. Today is the second Sunday in Advent, the Christian liturgical season before Christmas. That ends when Christmas Eve is over. In religions that follow a liturgical cycle, there's a series of things that naturally follow each other, leading from one to the next. You're supposed to experience them as if you were in the moment, that particular mythic moment. Advent is before Christmas. The people don't know Jesus is about to be born, and remember, nobody really knew much about him for another 30 years until he began the few years of his mission as a wandering rabbi preaching and teaching. So Advent is the period before all that, before Christmas occurs, before the miracle, before the unexpected, unlikely, implausible, and really unlooked for occurred. Oh, people hoped. You only have to read the records of the time to understand how much the Jewish people hoped. Like all oppressed people, they hoped despite there being no clear, reasonable reason for hope. They hoped because hope kept them alive. It kept them going. Because hope dies last. Because hope is fundamentally unreasonable, which is why it works. It drags you out of bed when it's cold and insists that you try, that you go on, because maybe today will be better, because maybe tomorrow or the tomorrow after that, a miracle will occur. And in the moment, hope is so patently unreasonable and ridiculous. It's easy to see the powers and principalities of the earth or the current empire seated firmly on all the levers of power, and how could that change? That's Advent. It's hope in the midst of very reasonable and obvious cause for despair. It is the chalet lit and relit again and again in the darkness. It is not the so-called Christmas season with merry carols and good cheer and cries of Merry Christmas, because during Advent, none of that is known. None of that is guaranteed. Advent is the season of being crushed in very real despair and hopelessness, legitimate hopelessness, and holding out a stubborn and uncertain hope anyway. It's the hope that says, I don't know what can happen to make this better. I don't. I can't see it, but I'm hoping anyway. In all the myths of the season, Christmas, Hanukkah, Yule, they all tell us that despite the bitter cold, despite the Romans and the frost giants and the pain and the loss, that the light returns, that it always returns. That's a philosophy of hope and of resistance. I don't have to give in to despair, which doesn't mean I don't feel it. We don't have to give in to despair because we know that as appealing and scary and bitter and dark and cold it is, the light will return. You see the daylit skies, the world of reason and healing. That's where light works. That's the job. The darkness, that's home. That's where the light goes to rest, where comfort and respite resides. The chalice is lit and relit. It is at home in the darkness. The world of light and goodness, of reason and fairness, of equity and justice, it doesn't need a chalice lit there. That world is full of light. We light a chalice to make a restful space in the darkness, a place where the unseen and perhaps scary or formless or as yet unformed, things that move in the darkness can approach and offer us hope, respite, and comfort. Hope for me is madness. It is the thing that keeps me coming back like one of Skinner's rats, always pressing the button to see if maybe this time there will be a pellet of pleasure. It is an addiction fueled by the random reinforcement that is our natural world. Sometimes the good thing happens. Sometimes the good guy wins in the end. Sometimes they don't. And there is no real reason or schedule for why one thing happens and the other does not. But still, I hope. Carl Jung advised us to embrace our madness to a degree. He wrote, "Be silent and listen. Have you recognized your madness and do you admit it? Have you noticed that all your foundations are completely mired in madness? Do you not want to recognize your madness and welcome it in a friendly manner? You wanted to accept everything, so accept madness too. Light of your madness shine and it will suddenly dawn on you. Madness is not to be despised and not to be feared, but instead you should give it life. If you want to find paths, you should also not spurn madness since it makes up such a great part of your nature. Be glad that you can recognize it, for you will thus avoid becoming its victim. Madness is a special form of the spirit, and it clings to all teachings and philosophies, but even more to daily life, since life itself is full of craziness and at the bottom, utterly illogical. Man strives toward reason only so that he can make rules for himself. Life itself has no rules. It is the mystery and its unknown law. What you call knowledge is an attempt to impose something comprehensible on life." Carl Jung. "We were never meant to survive." Now those words from Audre Lorde sound deeply threatening, even frightening, but they're true. What we know is that every one of us is mortal. No one gets out of life alive. Our faith tradition, by several different routes and through the doors of a variety of different theologies, has come to the conclusion that it is both a mistake and a distraction to spend much time worrying at all about what comes after this life. Every one of us will die, and what will befall us will befall us. Our tradition, however, comforts us with this deep knowledge. We all come from the same source. We are all inextricably bound together, and always have been. And what befalls us befalls all of us. What is important then is how we live, how we treat each other, what we do, what we fashion of the world. It is our choice whether we build hell or heaven. But it's a project that is as big as all of us. It began long before us and will continue long after us. Everywhere we are and everywhere we go is sacred ground. And, as our Canadian siblings remind us, we are not alone. We answer the call of love, and we do it with others, vigilant, strong, committed to the goals and ideals of peace, justice, equity, and compassion. We light the light in darkness. We know that the world is not the world we hope for, nor the one we imagine and dream of. We know that people, our siblings, friends, and family, are at greater risk now than they were a month ago. Hate crimes and hate speech have spiked since the election. Violence against marginalized people has increased. And we who have affirmed that because every life matters, black lives matter, and we look and see that is not yet true in America. A policeman who shot an unarmed man who was running away from him 5 times in the back and then planted a gun on him, all of it on video, has had a jury so far fail to convict him. Because while anyone who looks, one can see the crimes being committed on video, one white juror cannot, somehow in conscience, convict a white policeman of those crimes that we all see. Ours is not a fair or equitable or just society. And we will not look away. We will not pretend that somehow justice was done and that America is great. America could be great. The aspirations of this society have always been lofty. So lofty that it draws immigrants from around the world, or at least it did. But we know that those aspirations have often been a mirage. We too feel the call of Langston Hughes' poem crying out, "Let America be America again. Let it be the dream it used to be." And, "Oh yes, I say it plain, America was never America to me, and yet I swear this oath, America will be. Out of the rack and ruin of our gangster death, the rate and rot of graft and stealth and lies, we the people must redeem the land, the mines, the plants, the rivers, the mountains and the endless plain, all the stretch of these great green states, and make America, America again." And we know that somehow we've gotten lost, that somehow America has not moved forward, but rather stumbled into a nightmare with people with no qualifications other than being billionaires appointed to the cabinet, a white supremacist as the president's chief advisor, president-elect's chief advisor, we're not there yet, and a man so racist and misogynistic that his fellow senators, even those of his own party, denied him a judgeship in 1980, he is appointed to become our next attorney general. It is Advent. It is dark and bitter and scary out there, and there are hate crimes and monstrous people being formed into a cabinet for an imperial president. I cannot help but suspect that if he had a horse, he'd be making it a cabinet member, just as Caligula made his horse a senator. We light the chalice. The darkness needs us. As our Canadian kin tell us, we assure you that you are not alone, that we are with you. Together we can answer the call of love, shoulder to shoulder, arm in arm with a desire for justice, equity, and compassion. Together, we can be ever vigilant, lending moral and practical support to those who suffer from extreme policies, laws, and practices. We embrace and reclaim our flaming chalice as a powerful symbol of our proud tradition. We will stand strong, expressing our Unitarian Universalist values to all who ask, and answering the call of love in every way we can. We were not meant to survive. Buddhism warns us against attachment. That's not to be taken to mean, for example, that you don't love. It's that you hold it gently and loosely. It is not yours, you cannot possess it. And attempting to do so, being attached, only ensures that you will suffer its loss. Being attached to survival, that's a pretty basic attachment. I'm certainly attached to it. But if I lose it, I won't be suffering for it. For I can only suffer before I lose it, which is a very weird thought, really. It's embracing suffering before it even arrives. It is the opposite of hope. And we were not meant to survive. We were meant to struggle. In Human, All Too Human, philosopher Friedrich Nietzsche argued that Zeus did not want man to throw his life away, no matter how much the other evils might torment him, but rather to go on letting himself be tormented anew. To that end, he gives man hope. In truth, it is the most evil of evils, because it prolongs man's torment. As much as I love the darkness of German philosophers, I would argue with Nietzsche's that hope's purpose is to prolong suffering. I say hope is what permits us to survive the suffering. In his classic book, Man's Search for Meaning, Viktor Frankl opined that hope was the only thing that kept some folks alive in the unique hell of the German Holocaust camps. Hope is possible. Hope is necessary. Hope is both a thing with feathers and with talons. It is a thing that seems to prolong our suffering at the same time it allows us to endure it. It is a blessing and a curse at once, as it only appears when things are difficult and we need it. And yet, like a weed growing in a sidewalk crack, it persists. When one blade of hope is torn out, others spring up to take its place. It is as illogical and irrepressible as the human spirit. It is the thing, the only thing, some days, that allows me to identify myself as a humanist. Hope is that beautiful, illogical, wonderful spark that transcends the deepest despair and brings light into the darkness. I leave you today with the words of my friend and colleague, Laura Stone, an academic. She writes, hope. Don't give me your it's okays, your everything happens for a reason, your all turns out well in the end, and we are never given more than we can handle. I don't know if they are true, but I know that it's not where hope is. Hope is, I see you. Hope is, I love you. I don't know what tomorrow will bring, but I will be there with you. Hold on. There is still something worth fighting for, worth living for, worth dreaming for. May it be so. Blessed be and amen.